I'm Jason Michael Perry, the man with three first names, and this is Thoughts on Tech and Things. I know a lot of people right now are grieving, and it doesn't always have to do with a funeral or death. They're grieving a job, a career that felt like it was once solid, the version of their life that was promised. Here in Maryland, we've lost more than 30,000 federal jobs in about a year, more than any other state in the country. And that stops being a statistic the second it's your neighbor or someone who's waking up in a life that's quietly different than what it used to be. Over the next two episodes, I want to sit with what is grief and how AI is impacting this. Are we handling our grief or handing it over to a machine? And can a machine, an answer engine built to solve, help with something that might not be solvable at all? My guest sees this every week. Jessica Daniel is a psychotherapist and the founder of Peace and Perspective, a practice here in Maryland and D.C. Jess, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason. Thank you for having me.
So I want to start with breaking that first word open. What exactly is grief? I know I imagine, you know, a death, right? But since we've talked, I've started to realize that grief can mean a lot of different things. How would you describe grief?
Yeah, I'd say grief in the context of our conversation is going to be pretty expansive. So grief looking like a mourning of what we thought our lives were going to be like, especially as you named, like a lot of people are losing their jobs at this point. So mourning the life that we kind of were told we were going to have and experience. And that grief will look like depression, anxiety, irritability, like feeling hopeless and sometimes worthless. Like a lot of us went to school to develop very specific skill sets that are slowly becoming obsolete. So there is a grief in identity as well as to who am I at this point in time and how am I going to shift and change and evolve with the ever-changing world? So that is creating a lot of sadness and I'd say even confusion about like what life is going to look like for us in the future.
I wonder if the fact that most people don't necessarily define those things as grief means that they don't realize that they're grieving something, that they don't realize that they have the permission to go through this process of saying goodbye to something that felt so core to who they were.
Yeah, I think you're right on that. A lot of people aren't naming it as grief. And so that's one thing I'm doing with my patients is introducing that idea of like you are grieving a life that you had been living for 10, 15 years. And we have to almost ceremoniously develop a way to mourn that experience, to mourn that life, to mourn that identity. There are so many people whose careers have been their whole identity for so many, so many years. And then to have to redefine who they are at this point in time in their life can be kind of scary too. So there's grief, there's fear, and there's a lot of uncertainty kind of along with it. So I feel like grief in its own right has become a very complex emotion.
The thing that I hear from a lot of people in my social network is that they're grieving jobs. That there's this statistic I saw on LinkedIn early this morning that we have the highest long-term unemployment that we've seen in a very long time, which is crazy to imagine. But here in Maryland, I know that you're familiar with, as I said in the opening, that there is something like 30,000 federal jobs that have been eliminated in this very short stretch. I talk to tons of people who have found that their lives have changed drastically from what they were used to. Some of this is employment. Some of this is income and income differences. Some of this is, you know, decisions about where do they live and where do they move. And now, like, based on this definition, these are just some examples of grieving. I'm sure we could go through all types of additional examples. But I'm wondering, how do you deal with this? I mean, how do you start to, of course, as a therapist, how do you deal with the fact that you're grieving such major changes in your life?
It's about giving yourself the time and space to feel. A lot of us are go-getters, myself included, and we don't necessarily slow down enough to recognize that our nervous system is experiencing a crisis of sorts. So I introduced that idea of like, what would it look like to slow down and to truly somatically witness and experience what your body is going through. So, for example, a lot of people are experiencing physical symptoms like back pain, neck pain, leg pain, have noticed that sometimes it's even hard to articulate things. That is sometimes grief showing up in the physical form. So having people recognize that their body is telling them they need to slow down and discover what the body is trying to say to them. So I will guide people through that experience, and some people will be like, okay, yeah, when I think about my past job, my back starts to hurt. So we will examine, okay, what is the texture of the back pain? Does it move around as you're talking about the grieving experience you're going through? And that will unlock a whole new relationship you have with your body and your nervous system too. So that is one component that I feel like people need to recognize as well. Another piece is like allowing the emotions to come out. A lot of us are putting on a tough and brave face and pretending we're not being impacted by it. We're applying to so many jobs that other people are also applying to. There was one employer, she was telling me how there were about like 300 social work applicants for maybe like 5 positions. And that is crazy to know that you're one of like 300 people aiming for like a 5 position role. So there is grief in that process, knowing that you're putting forth a lot of effort and you might not get a return on your time investment in these applications. So it's allowing people to truly experience disappointment while not being bogged down by it. So there's duality here of we want to experience the emotion but not get stuck in it, because we do have to kind of pick ourselves up by our bootstraps and still move forward.
We'll get into more of this with Jess after a quick word from our sponsors.
Got a baby on the way? It's time for Hoopty. I'm Roxy Aldrew, Baltimore-based inventor of Hoopty Hoops, NFC-enabled silicone rings that turn any baby bottle into a smart device. Just tap to sync your bottles with our free app. Hoopty tracks your bottles, calculates expiration, and sends reminders so you never waste a drop. Shop gethoopty.com. That's GETHOOPDEE.com, and use the code THOUGHTS20 for 20% off.
Invested in AI but not seeing results? You're not alone. Perry Labs helps organizations figure out what's working and what's next. Start with our AI assessment at perrylabs.io.
I'm Jason Michael Perry. Welcome back to Thoughts on Tech and Things, where I'm talking with Jessica Daniels on the way that artificial intelligence is impacting therapy and grief. So I imagine folks listening to today's podcast are thinking, what about emerging technology? How does this relate to technology? And when I think of grief, when I think of depression, when I think of health issues, I have started turning to artificial intelligence, to AI. I ask questions. When we have struggles with the business, I find myself in a I call it a long therapy conversation with my artificial intelligence. You know, Sometimes I got to give it a name so we can really get into it and dig into, you know, whatever trauma or thing is I'm going through. And I have heard mixed feelings from therapists on whether or not dealing with something like a job change or whatever, you know, a death in the family, if it's safe to use artificial intelligence as a way to, well, to grieve or to work yourself through these issues. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, I love this question. So I feel like using chat or any sort of AI strictly for therapy is not the best route to go. The positives I do see in utilizing AI, especially in between sessions, is to help with processing and organizing thoughts. So many of my clients are really complex and philosophical thinkers, and sometimes they will take themselves on this amazing rabbit hole, and they need help bringing themselves back to like what the main point of what they're trying to process is. And I feel AI is beautiful for that. I use it for myself with that. Sometimes I'll just type in a tremendous amount of words and complex emotions that I'm feeling, and it'll spit back and reflect what I feel like, okay, that's actually what I'm trying to say. Now I have a clear direction on where I want to take this conversation or like this thought train that I'm having. So some of my clients will actually bring in their chat notes, and we'll process together and tease out some of the complex emotions that they were experiencing in a way that chat or any other AI entity cannot produce, because it does come down to the reflecting back and the witnessing and the human connection of conversation that AI isn't able to provide. And just because it isn't able to provide that doesn't mean it's not useful. It's just a more of reflection and organization tool than affirming or validating or giving the emotional input that happens in therapy.
So you see this more as a co-pilot to your therapy, which makes sense to me, because one of the benefits of artificial intelligence is that there's no judgment, that you can share things that maybe, even though I know that it's a safe relationship that you have with your clients, it's still sometimes hard to talk about certain feelings or explore certain things in a comfortable way. So I imagine this as a co-pilot where you can go in and do a little bit of exploration and then bring back those results can be helpful.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's an excellent point. There is no judgment. Although I do feel like sometimes when I've used AI, it's been a little snappy towards me. I'll be like caught off guard, be like, what? Why are you calling me out for that? But yeah, the judgment piece, because there is an air of vulnerability that is required to participate effectively in therapy. If you withhold information, I can't help you. And sometimes people do end up feeling judged when they're being witnessed by another human. So AI can reduce that sense of judgment. And I do want to have people err on the side of caution here, because if you put in really personal information into any sort of AI system, that is information that is no longer confidential. So just be incredibly mindful about what you're expressing to it, because it is not bound by any sort of restrictions that I am bound by. Like, I have to be the secret keeper. I am a vault. Nobody can kind of look into my mental script and see what we were talking about.
That's important. But I've heard that same thing from a legal standpoint, that the reminder that your conversations can be subpoenaed, right? So somebody can go back and see what you've talked about, be it whatever it is. Now, it's not all roses when we talk about AI. Of course, the thing that immediately comes to mind is that, well, these are systems that want to please you, that want to tell you that you're doing things right. I've read many things about people who've committed suicide after conversations with artificial intelligence. And I'm curious, you know, that level of giving information in, but still getting something that is always somewhat encouraging in a way that can be a little dangerous, right?
Yeah, I think dangerous is a really good word for it. We need to be challenged, sometimes very directly and sometimes gently. And one thing that AI, from my usage of it, has not done is challenge me in a way where I feel like it is pushing back. So I like to run little experiments for myself. So I will type into an AI platform that I'm experiencing really bad depression symptoms, I'm having maybe suicidal ideation, and there are now some safeguards put in that I do appreciate. So 999 will be recommended by the chat bot, and it will say, like, all right, I'm noticing you're saying you're depressed, you're having suicidal ideation, here's some resources. But you can push past that and be like, oh, no, you're misunderstanding what I'm saying. So it will, because of the legality of people having committed suicide and been guided through it by AI, there are safeguards, but I feel like it is not the same as if somebody were to tell me face to face what they are going through. I would literally hands-on help that person get through that situation. So I feel like that is the shortcoming of AI at this point. It cannot stop you. You can override it pretty easily.
Picking up from that idea that you need that back and forth with your therapist, There was a clinical trial at Dartmouth last year, and it was this purpose-built therapy robot that you could use to ask questions and talk about your feelings, talk about things that are going on in your life. And as part of that research, one of the things that kept coming out is that it's important that your therapist doesn't just agree with you, that your therapist doesn't just say yes or and pushes back, right? And that what I wonder about is if you're using artificial intelligence as a co-pilot, if you're using AI as a assistant in your therapy session, that someone's bringing you their chat, there's the possibility that the AI is affirming or pushing them in directions that are not necessarily right, which can lead to, I guess, complications. So I wonder, how do you balance these things? And maybe there's a thought process or a thing that you give, maybe there are suggestions that you give on how you use AI in combination with, you know, your therapy sessions.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, yeah, AI is incredibly affirming. And I'm the type of therapist where I love calling my clients out. I just, I love it. And I'll preface things and say things gently and always with an air of curiosity, too, because curiosity is the main, one of the main pillars of being a therapist here. And that is something that I feel like AI doesn't necessarily embody. So, yes, it will affirm, but it won't ask more probing questions. So it almost becomes like an echo chamber for my clients and will sometimes create thought patterns that have derailed them from like their original concern and make them think that there's something else wrong with them when they're actually pretty typical. So when clients bring in their notes from AI, we will dissect it with a lens of curiosity. And I will ask challenging questions of it, of where do you see this pattern actually playing out? Or is this something that you want to be an issue? Because a lot of times we will take on identities that don't necessarily belong to us, but we feel like we need to embody. And AI will not have that conversation with you back and forth. So one example of that is people saying, well, I'm a depressed person. Well, is your situation causing the depression or is it you? Is it a chemical imbalance causing the depression? Because those are two very different situations.
So this makes this next thing I'm going to ask a little bit more dangerous, I think. When we talk about grief, we talk about people who are losing their jobs, money's tight, and I have to imagine that one of the first places that you start to cut is the money that you're spending on your therapy bill or your therapist. And of course, that doesn't mean that all of your problems are solved. That doesn't mean that everything is perfectly right and you're still possibly having different challenges. You mentioned, you know, that you're not taking a call at 2 a.m., but who do you turn to? You turn to AI. There's some statistics out there from ChatGPT that are interesting, that there are a lot of people who are having deep therapy conversations with artificial intelligence, and especially ChatGPT. OpenAI has said that more than 1 million people a week are talking to ChatGPT about suicide, which is a frightening thing. And this means that this is making health professionals afraid. The American Psychological Association met with a federal regulator to raise concerns that artificial intelligence, that these chatbots are posing as therapists, and this can endanger the public because, again, people who are turning to these things to help them deal with trauma in ways that are important. And I know that OpenAI, Anthropic, and these companies have tried to, like you mentioned, put tools in place to make suggestions, to push people to public resources that are available. But it doesn't change the fact that this is in a lot of ways becoming the way that a lot of us are coping with this. How do you feel about that?
I feel pretty sad about it. I feel like it is forcing a lot of therapists to have to evolve in ways we never thought our career was going to go. We were taught that there was going to be career security in healthcare, and now that is not going to be the case. So there's I guess if we were to go back to grief, a collective mourning in like the therapeutic communities and in healthcare as a whole of like, okay, how are we going to pivot and still care for our patients while knowing that there is AI that is creating this support system for them? And like, how safe is that support system? Because we talked about before, it's their chat records can be subpoenaed and everything can be put out there. So we are forced to try to get creative and reconstruct and almost like redefine what healthcare is going to be for the future. So yeah, I feel sad about it. It has placed a lot of pressure on myself, especially as a business owner, of trying to pivot and create new ways to support people that are affordable, because a lot of people are losing their jobs, while also being able to support myself too, because I still have to pay my bill. So it's creating a really tricky dynamic between patient and provider.
Do you have any recommendations for someone who is going through a period and has had to cancel their therapy sessions or is now using ChatGPT or Claude or any other tool as their main sounding board? You know, maybe their structures or something or things that they can look at or read that would help make these tools better?
I definitely recommend to people establish community, like in-person community, and develop relationships with other people. And it goes back to the vulnerability piece of people being worried that they will be judged, but we're all worried about that. So I think we have to acknowledge that this is just part of our human experience, our desire to be seen and witnessed and fully accepted unconditionally, and that there are people out there who are willing to do that. It might take a while to find those people. There is trial and error, but it is possible, and it is something that will create security and healing to get through this challenging situation that we're all going through. So it's kind of a both and. Yes, use AI to organize your thoughts and to maybe help you define what type of support you need in community, but then you have to get outside your house and go forth and connect with that community.
So I want to come back to grief. There is an entire cottage industry in the AI world that is targeting grief, and specifically death, the ability to create what's called a digital twin, a dynamic version of a human that existed. This means taking all of the chats that maybe existed about a person, all of the information, the way that they talk, all of this, and creating something that you can use to have conversations that brings to life something that's not there. And it's both, to me as a technologist, an amazing idea that there is that you can continue to talk to a dead family member or a friend, but also how does that allow someone to grieve?
Yeah, I love this. So I am also fascinated by you called it twinning? Is that what it is?
Digital twins.
Digital
yes.
twins. Yeah, it's a fascinating concept, and I think it's wild how technology works in this way. So I feel like just from the nerding out standpoint, I think it's really cool. On the grief end, I feel like it's terrifying because we are meant to grieve. That is part of human nature. Everything has to have an end point. And especially knowing that the digital twin is not the actual person, we're now creating a really weird parallel dynamic between an entity that is not human and a human having these deep emotions. And it will prevent us from learning how to let go. And letting go is a necessary part of life to be able to evolve. If we're always staying stuck in particular connections or dynamics, we're not growing. And we can literally just die out. We might not be able to move on. So for the example of maybe holding on to a grieving loved one, it's like that if you're grieving a partner, you may never be able to move on and find a new partner because you're holding on to the digital twin of your previous one. Now, you might feel a sense of comfort from holding on to that digital twin, but you're isolating yourself slowly but surely, and that is going to trickle down into your other dynamics and relationships too and stunt your emotional growth. So I think we have to play with this very mindfully of, yeah, it can feel like it will be a quick dopamine hit to be like, okay, yeah, I'm receiving the words of affirmation from the digital twin of my late partner, but I'm not moving forward and creating new relationships to help me evolve and to unlock other aspects of myself that I haven't yet realized.
The idea, Jess, that there's a partner who you can talk to using artificial intelligence, forever. it's both, like you said, it's amazing from a technology standpoint, but it's also, there's so many potential ramifications that I think that it deserves its own conversation. So with that said, this is part one. And next time, Jess and I are going to pick up right where we left off, and we're going to dig more into grief, death, and the machines that promise to bring people back to life. Jess, it's been awesome having you on the show, and I will see you again next week.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me.
If any of this hits close to home, or if you find need for therapy or support, please note that we have additional resources in the show notes. Thanks again to the team at WIPR. Join us next week to talk more about grief and how that is being impacted by artificial intelligence. I'm Jason Michael Perry. This is Thoughts on Tech and Things, and I'll see you next time.